thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two awesome sponsors for you at the top of the show. One of them is Environments for Humans, promoting their CSS Summit. The URL there is csssummit.com. Now you can attend one of the best CSS and SAS events no matter where you are in the world. Sign up for that at csssummit.com. Use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW for 20% off. And lynda.com, Dave.
L-Y-N-D-A.
/shop talk. Yeah, it's the world's largest online learning resource. Over 3,000 video courses on there. Go to lynda.com/shop talk to sign up to get your 10-day free trial there. We'll tell you more about both those things later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Good morning, Shopping Maniacs. You're listening to the morning edition of the Shop Talk Show.
Big Nuts.
Wild and zany things. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Goyer.
That's right. It is, you know, if you're listening to the podcast, you're time shifting, as they say in the industry. You could be listening to it late night. I don't know. But as we record here, it is the ripe hour of 9 a.m. 10 a.m. there, I believe, in New York, where our guest, Laura, is. Laura Shank, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Yay. That's fantastic. Yeah, it's morning edition. Morning edition.
Big Nuts.
Sorry.
So we have this really clear.
Request for sound effects. So
yeah,
take it to the next level. 11.
All right. Okay. That's good. Composure.
No, it's
composure.
Good. Laura. It's Laura. It's Laura. Not Laura.
Not right? Laura.com.
That's right. Not Laura.com. Quite literally your domain name. And there's a very, it's subtle. It probably doesn't feel subtle to you, but it's definitely pronounced differently too, right? It's Laura.
Yeah,
I feel like you can dwell on the U, I think, if it's there.
Yeah. People in the South tend to say Laura for Laura. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's incorrect, but
that'd be cool. It'd be good for you.
Yeah, I know, because I can get it usually. My New York relatives say, like, Lara a little bit.
Lara?
Yeah. But I usually say Lara Croft, like that, because I like to draw that parallel from the get-go.
Sure. I think there's a lot of similarities there, actually.
You like to contextualize it for the youth.
Yeah.
Even the hair, I feel like, could happen.
Yeah, okay. my email's Laura at not Laura, and sometimes people, like, have typed that in, and they still say, hi, Laura. And I'm like, oh, wow, maybe I just shouldn't respond to you. I don't know.
Maybe you should ask your fingers.
Yeah.
They know. So you're a wearer of a million hats, kind of on purpose. You are literally a freelancer and teacher and just shepherder of young minds in a sense. So maybe we could kind of knock them out in order so people have a kind of understanding of what we do, and then talk about kind of how we met and some of the things that transpired there. So anyway, what's the main gig these days? Is it the client
Yeah,
work?
Good question. So I do have a million things. Well, main gig is teaching. So I love teaching and kind of educating the young minds, right? So kind of teaching, consulting stuff. My new business model lately is I want like all my billable hours to be in person with people. But I also build websites, right? So do a lot of WordPress stuff with Timber. Definitely link to that in the show stuff. Timber's pretty awesome. Like Twig templating for WordPress. Love it.
Sure. Well, I'll note that down. We'll get into that in a minute.
Totally. And yeah, you know, the freelance stuff, writing emails, kind of thing. Drinking cocktails.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So teaching, working on websites, and drinking cocktails. I suppose that's Laura in a nutshell, I guess. So you were kind of recently teaching at somewhere, right? Or you've bounced around for teaching for other people and then do a bit of like kind of teaching on your own.
Yeah. So I teach at Pratt. I do a class called UI Prototyping and Code. So yeah, they started on this UI UX certificate. And so I kind of came up with that class, and it's really cool, like working with designers, kind of helping them to design in code a little bit, and designer myself. So it's kind of nice to like explain things a little visually, things like that. And then I work with a company called Decoded that does corporate training. So they do these day intensives called Code in a Day, where you walk non-technical professionals through building a web app. And it's like super cool because it's actually like a geolocated check-in app.
Mm. Nice.
So. Cool.
So they, yeah. Wow, that's interesting. Nice. Okay. So it's all the teaching and the building of sites for stuff, built some interesting sites and things. And so at one point, just cause you, I feel like you're always kind of running around, figuring out, doing interesting things to do and stuff. You reached out to me many, many months ago now, interested in maybe doing a CodePen New York meetup. So I work for an app called CodePen, and we do the, you know, people, I've been running meetups lately. They reach out to us, and you're kind of a quintessential example of that. People have been like, can I have one in New York? I'm like, yeah, you can. We can't give you any money, but we can send you some swag, and we can support it and try to get people to show up for it and stuff. And that they did. So there was you had the first one at some bar somewhere, and some people showed up for it. And then I was like, I was going to be in New York, and I was like, let's do another one. And we ended up having it at Etsy, which was really fun. And now there's another one coming up at... we're going to do it at the Tumblr offices and stuff. So you've been helping out with those and kind of making CodePen New York happen.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like all these things, just send an email, you can figure it out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've always been like, it's nothing. It's so easy, which I always found funny because a lot of people are like, when they run an event, they're like, they're done. They're like, never again. That was the most work ever.
Like a little bit of soul has left their eyes.
Yeah, totally. And Laura like doesn't even break a sweat.
Great. Well, I feel like bar events are pretty easy because you kind of just like go into the bar and be like, hey, bar, is it okay if I bring like 20 something people to give you money on a slow night? And they're usually like, yeah, it sounds good. And then that's it.
Right. And clearly there's a difference between that and selling tickets and booking venues and,
totally.
Organizing so
the meetup
speakers.
Yeah, it's a little simpler, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. But still, it's effort. And thank you for doing that. So at the one that we held at Etsy, which was really fun, we got a bunch of people to show up in a really cool space there in the, I guess it's Dumbo, right? I'm learning my like New York lingo a little bit. We had the format of the event was speakers, and we, you know, like I gave a dumb little like future of CodePen talk, and then a bunch of other speakers spoke, and you were happy to get up and talk about some stuff. And it was like you made some slides, but it was like quick and kind of like off the cuff. This is an interesting thing that happened to me recently in all of your stuff that you do. You're starting to think like maybe an interesting move for me would be to like get a traditional job, because you talk about teamwork and you talk about these kind of things. But then you're like, but how do I talk about teamwork if I don't really work on a team? I think that was part of the impetus there. Anyway, you're like starting to run around like maybe I should apply at some jobs, and applied at one where you looked at the job description of it, and it had basically bullet points, and you kind of went down the bullet points, and you know, without going through each one of them, it was kind of like most of those bullet points, like something like 8 out of 10 or something, if we'd throw a number on it, were like, yes, like I basically qualify this. There might have been one or two in there that were iffy, but not really. It was kind of dependent on how they were words, but like anybody in their right mind would have applied for this job when you're that close to its description, right? Then you go in and are interviewed for the position, and it mostly goes well and it's a good fit and there's lots of talking. And then there's like kind of one moment where they ask you to like basically whiteboard a question. It's like a Google interview, right? Like, you know, sort this algorithm with the super bubble fancy sort on this thing. And you're like, and then, you know, in your own words, kind of like, we're like, why would I need to do this? This is, you know, kind of like ended up not answering the question. Or maybe you could tell that part of the story.
Yeah.
I only know it so intimately.
So we were in this kind of like collaborative coding thing online. And the first question was something about like getting phone numbers. And I was like, oh, well, I could kind of like select it with jQuery, that kind of thing. And then he asked me FizzBuzz. And
Big nuts.
Yeah.
Just pretend that said fizz buzz.
I know. I was thinking I should get that like tattooed on my forehead or something. but probably not. Yeah. And so he kind of, you know, he like explained the question, you know, so it's like every third thing, you know, print out 100 numbers, every third one, write fizz, every fifth, write buzz, every 15th, write fizz buzz. And I was kind of like, you know, I'm like nervous in this coding thing. And I'm like, well, why would I ever do that? Like, what use case is this? You know? So like before I was even like thinking through it, I was a little like shocked, I guess. And I think too with web, a lot of times, especially like working for yourself and building sites like without a team, right? Everything's kind of learned on a need to know basis. So we approach problems with like how, like, you know, what do I need to figure out? Because you obviously can't know everything. So yeah, I was kind of like, I don't know. And, you know, then the next question was something about like, take this time code string and turn it into seconds. And I was also like, I can't do this while you're watching me. So kind of right. Took it home over the weekend and figured it out a little bit. And then, you know, found a link on Stack Overflow and just said like, oh, this is my solution. This is how I solve problems.
which is of course how absolutely everybody solves the problem, especially something like converting time strings. I mean, there's definitely zero times in my life where I ever from memory did that. You know, you just Google it and you find the little snippet on Stack Overflow and then you put it on. Of course that's how it works. I mean, I'm sure there's some geniuses out, and they're not even geniuses. They're just people whose mind has a more of like a memory kind of thing, or they work in one particular language so much that it's just at the tip of their fingertips or what. But it does not make you less of a programmer to have to Google the syntactic way to do kind of a time code conversion kind of thing. And I'm not trying to be defensive here. I'm telling you how it is. We've been programmers for a long time, and that's how it works.
I was going to say, I probably convert a time, you know, stamp once a month, and I never remember it. Like, is this in seconds, milliseconds, or some weird, like, Russian seconds that there's only 36 seconds a minute or something? You know, I'm just like, what is this time? So I always Google. That seems like a very responsible solution. And if you can pick the right one, that is a very good job. If you pick the wrong Stack Overflow, now I would have some grief. If you were like, what, this one works or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's about like being, you know, this, and like, this is what I teach a lot too, because it's like, you can get so bogged down in like the technical parts of a language and like the nuances, but that's all like online and in tutorials. So like, go learn that. And I think like the real like bread and butter, right, of being a developer is being able to like find things and be really discerning about what you use and like what a good solution is. So you don't need to understand like every single line, but you understand that like this is good and like this is good code, I guess. So.
Yeah. You know, the example of the fizz buzz, you know, as you're writing it, I'm like solving it in my head. How would I do this? Blah, blah, blah. And you have to use the modulo statement, like the usually it's the percent sign to like basically divide this and show me the remainder, right?
Yeah, and if the remainder is zero, then it is divisible by that number.
Yeah.
So it's about remembering that.
But what's weird about that, like I probably made websites for 10, 15 years or so, 10 years before I realized, even knew that existed. Like being self-taught, you don't know that exists right out of the box. You have to be shown that. Like I didn't know that until I like watched a friend code that or something similar. And I was like, whoa, what did you just, that exists? That's like a math operator? And he's like, oh yeah, of course. And I'm like, wow, I should have taken taken a computer science course because.
But if you really needed to, if you really needed the remainder after a division happened, you could probably, you would just Google around and figure it out, and it would probably turn up the modulus operator. You know, like it's probably, you didn't know it existed, but you could probably find it if you needed it. Now, so this FizzBuzz thing. What it, like in its defense or whatever, the whole point of it, which everyone is very quick to point out for in reasons that we'll get to slightly later in this story, that the point of it is that you get to listen to someone kind of out loud or in code kind of think out a problem. They're like, oh, interesting. I'm going to have to use a loop construct of some kind. I'm going to have to use a little bit of math. I'm going to have to print something to the screen or to the console in some way. So you're, it's not about FizzBuzz. It's not about that this problem is so integral to tech that it's, but the problem is listening to somebody think something through, right? I mean, that's the traditional wisdom here. I'm not necessarily like defending the use of it in interviews necessarily or whatever, but that's kind of the traditional point of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's totally valid. I just think like there's a good, there's a new-ish podcast called View Sources, and they have a, I think View Sources, but they have a episode about hiring recently, and they're kind of talking about like how this guy does it. Like he'll give people a task that's like build a component with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript or something like that. And so you can talk through, I don't know, I think like talking through real problems maybe is a little more useful, and you can kind of see the, I don't know, like can you think programmatically that way? But it is like this filter out fake programmers thing. So,
yeah,
which is
right.
kind of a valid strategy, but.
But in a specific context too, like for engineers, I'm sure, I think that the interviewing process for, if you're hiring someone to work on like deep code for your search engine or whatever, that's, you know, not then FizzBuzz is probably too easy and you should be asking harder questions. But for somebody who's, you know, they were hiring for like a design-ish position, and, you know, like it just seemed like we Googled for 10 things you should ask during an interview and just like asked one just because it didn't seem to fit the bill. And that was kind of the problem. So you gave this talk about it and it was funny and you were like at the CodePen meetup and people were nodding their heads in agreement with the, because there's clearly some problems with hiring and stuff. It wasn't a story about FizzBuzz necessarily. It was about the problems with the interviewing process and what it's like to write job interviews. This is there's problems on kind of both sides of the hiring process. Like how do you hire somebody good? What questions do you ask? What do you write in the job description thing? And then how do you approach that when you're reading as somebody's looking for a job? How do you handle it? Clearly, there's some disconnects here, and there's a lot of people on both sides that aren't particularly happy with how it's going at the moment. So that's why I thought, God, Laura's so perfect for like to take that as a thing, and we talked about it and thought what would be a good article. And Laura, as you do, just kind of took it and run with it, and we ended up publishing it on CSS Tricks as this Tales of a Non-Unicorn, because I guess that's how you think of yourself, right? Even though you have lots of kind of multi-talented abilities. Maybe don't consider yourself a unicorn.
Well, not anymore. Well, it's like, I mean, you know, there's like the unicorn designer, whatever. That's like this person that's not a myth. It's like becoming a job title because there are a lot of people that can design and code well, you know. And so I kind of like was thinking I was that. And then this was one of those. I think I even like wrote that in the cover letter or something. It was like, I'm what the industry calls a unicorn. Like, I can design and code. And then, you know, I had this thing and I was like, whoa, you know, it was like very humbling. I was like, wow, I really don't know what I'm doing. And I mean, I do know what I'm doing. So it's ridiculous for what I do. And that's not what I interpreted the job to be. So that's kind of the
sure.
issue there.
And people that know more than that and are also kind of jerks are like, oh, it's just, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, like when they call people script kiddies on Hacker News or something, that's what they would consider somebody who's like, oh, you do a little WordPress and a little
dang.
You're just a little script kitty kind of thing, you know?
Hashtag sick burn. Ooh.
Yeah. So anyway, the job thing for you didn't go particularly well. Anyway, you wrote it up and I felt like did a pretty fair thing here. And it wasn't crucifying this company necessarily. It was just kind of highlighting the – in fact, they weren't named. Nobody has any idea who this was to this day, including me. And the story got picked up, I think, because it was very – it resonated with a lot of people. I knew it would, you know, it's just this thing. And anyway, but as we're sitting there, we happened to be at a conference together, And I was like, you know what? Let's put like Fizzbuzz like dying in a fire in it, because it would be kind of funny. And it was kind of like screw Fizzbuzz. Anyway, I made that dumb graphic in that article that literally did have Fizzbuzz dying in a fire, and that was probably a mistake. It's still in there because I figure why?
Yeah, leave it there.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
That was probably what incited the riot in a little bit. But it, you know, it went on Reddit and Hacker News and all these places that are kind of known for their vitriol and their garbage comment threads and stuff. You know, I'm sure Reddit does good things for good people and stuff. And you can't just say all people on Reddit suck, because that's totally unfair. And there's subreddits that I'm sure loving. And well, okay, I'm trying to. Okay, whatever. This was an example of a comment thread that was not particularly good. And of course, like all bad comments thread do, it wasn't a critical analysis of this article acknowledging the problems between hiring and job descriptions and all that stuff. It was like, you know, dumb woman can't do Fizzbuzz. You should be fired. You know, like, I don't know. They got bad and worse than that, I'm sure. But it just wasn't. The point of it was you're sour grapes for not knowing Fizzbuzz, when that really wasn't the point, kind of, right?
Yeah. And the big thing is they changed the title of it on the post. So it was like, designer applies for JS job, fails Fizzbuzz, and writes 5-page rant about it, I think was the title. And so you probably get people reading that, and they're commenting on that line. They're not like actually reading the article. Like somebody had tweeted about it, and they were like, ha ha, like designer applies, whatever. And then like someone I knew had read the article and like tweeted back at them and was like, hey, did you read this? Like, what? And he's like, no, I just commented on it. So I think probably a lot of that too. I mean, because like
the title set the mood.
Headline, so yeah.
Anyway, so of course we were biased on it because I know you and you helped me with CodePen and you published it on my site. And of course I'm going to defend you because I'm a tireless promoter of my friends and will defend them to the death. But I also think we happen to be right in this case. And it's not like a solved issue. And in fact, there's lots of, you know, of course, it's not like, oh gosh, good thing we wrote this because now all job titles and descriptions are perfect. You know, like, of course, probably nothing changed, but not, maybe not nothing, because you have heard from some people that have said, right, that, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to try to do a better job with my job descriptions and stuff. And as a matter of fact, you are starting to offer that as a service.
Yeah, well, I figured, I don't know, it was an idea and I just like, threw up a page that I haven't really been marketing at all, but I was like, oh, I should just like edit people's job descriptions, because so much of it is like, I don't know, correct like capitalization and listing of technology. So when you say you want like a front-end developer PHP or something, like a lot of job title, like job postings say that. And so just a quick like, you know, revision of it and be like, oh, is this reasonable? No, it's not. Like, let's cut out all this corporate crap. Yeah. So things like that, it could be a kind of a quick service.
I think that's super valuable, even though it's not like you know everything about every technology and can do that. But just your if I was reading a job description and it had capital J lowercase query, I'd be like, nope, next. You know, I'd be like, just because it's just that's a bad like canary in the coal mine kind of thing. Like, you know, it's just it doesn't smell right. You know, like maybe it's a great job, but like probably not, you know, like if there's so little care put into something like this, even.
Right. And they're like, in that sense, right, they're like, you know, filtering out really good people by not paying attention to it. So, you know, because if a really talented person's looking at a job posting and they see all these misspellings or it's like unreasonable skill requirements, then it's like, oh, well, I'm going to go to something else because I, you know, can.
Yeah. So sometimes there's those funny classic mistakes that end up being jokes in themselves. Kind of like, I need 10 years of React experience or whatever. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. 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 Those.
That's not a thing.
On Rails.
So we'll link up this article, and of course you can have your own opinions on it or whatever. But that's why we invited Laura on here, because of the interesting things she does and this kind of epic thing that became an internet wildfire not so long ago.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'll take internet wildfire all the time. It's good for page views.
Boyo. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had some, like, ideas about this, though, just in terms of, like, solutions, right? And I think, I don't know, I was thinking about how, like, the web is in its awkward 20s, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like everybody talks about imposter syndrome a lot. which I think, I don't know, I do too, but now I'm kind of like, stop it. Because, like, we have skills, you know? Like, if you can code and, like, make something work, like, you're not a fake developer, you know? And so I think it's more, like, identity crisis in a lot of ways, especially when it comes to, like, the designer-developer conundrum. So it's, like, you know, I was looking through this Reddit thread a little bit, kind of foolishly. But it was, like, you're not a real developer. Like, you don't know JavaScript. Like, you can't call yourself, you know, you can't say you know jQuery if you don't know JavaScript, which I think is wrong. But yeah, and so I was thinking, like, maybe we could have a kind of a standardized set of titles almost. So Liza Gardner gave a really good talk at Web Design Day about, like, the virtuoso generalist. I think generalist is a really good term for this, and kind of like generalist versus specialist. And then we can maybe break down what you know, what the specializations are. I don't know, but some kind of like standardization, or in job postings, like, make it a form instead of a text field, you know? Like, yeah, make it kind of a drop down or something. You have to choose things.
I think that's interesting because, yeah, it's like people are like, she's not a developer, and you're like, no, I like make thousands of dollars a month developing websites. What would you call it? You know, like, that's what I do. What is it? It's sort of weird that people get hung up on job titles and terms and stuff. But I do, I like the generalist term because it's kind of like, yeah, I could write you a Rails app, or I could, you know, write some CSS or make you an animation. I have all these tools and they're very different skills, but I could do all of them. I don't know.
Yeah. And also, like, the skill of being able to pick things up. So, like, for this job, for example, like, they wanted, you know, someone who maybe was more of a JavaScript developer, right? And, like, I've never had to do that before, per se. But, like, I can pick things up quickly and I could, like, figure it out. So, yeah, like, those kind of values, too, I think could maybe be a little more pronounced in job descriptions and things.
Yeah.
There's other Lara Hogan, also in New York, mm-hmm. also at Etsy, who has a post that we should put in that is very related here on it's a pastry box one called I'm having totally reasonable amount of self-confidence, and I wish there was I should have picked a paragraph to read or something, but you should, it's about you know, she's good at lots of things. But then came a moment where she wasn't sure about or something, and then one of her friends, who's always very like, you can do this, and which is a great friend in that way, because that's what your friends should be doing for you, and then was like, when Laura thought she couldn't, maybe she's. The other woman was like, don't let your imposter syndrome talk, kind of thing. And normally that's like a, you know, encouraging, like, imposter syndrome is a thing, and sometimes it has a bad voice telling you can't do something when you really can or whatever. But it's also like, you also, you know, like, don't, like, reach for that too quickly. You know, like, knowing your own abilities and stuff is just as useful of knowing what you can't do is just as useful as what you can. And I'm just kind of trying to paraphrase her article there, but you know, your confidence as a person can be in knowing what you don't know how to do too. And like, I confidently know that I'm don't know Perl or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a thing, but yeah, yeah. It's just like, because it became a hot button word, I think now that it's at risk of being overused, I think is perhaps part of
it. Yeah. And it's like not that productive, I feel like. So it's kind of like, oh, I feel this, end of story. You know, it's not like any, you can't really, like, act on it because it's, like, the syndrome, so to speak, so there's no solution. I don't know. But, yeah, in terms of, like, knowing what you don't know, like, this in the chat room, somebody said, like, you can't do jQuery without JavaScript, which obviously you can't because jQuery is built on JavaScript. But, like, the concepts in jQuery are, like, so different and, like, you know, it's selecting things and it's, like, moving things around potentially. There's no, like, prototypes and, like, trying to learn JavaScript right now. Specifically for the CodePen meetup coming up.
Oh, nice.
maybe. But yeah, so I think that too, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, the traditional, I mean, that's a classic hot button fire issue too. And And I've always kind of been on the jQuery side of it, but just because that literally was my intro. I read a book about jQuery. I loved jQuery. I can only write in jQuery. Some of the normal JavaScript syntax stuff freaked me out, and I just didn't get there. I kind of get it now, but to this day, so many years later, just because I work on an active app that's still using jQuery, I still feel most comfortable in jQuery land, and you know, that's the way it is. I feel confident enough in my skills now that if I had to move away from it, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But still, you know, like I feel like jQuery is a perfectly good place to start in this because I did and it worked fine for me. And that's all you can talk about in this world is your own.
Have y'all ever written an AJAX request without jQuery?
Sure.
Well, I have. And gosh darn it.
It's not that bad. It's getting a lot better.
It turns your eyebrows white.
ESS 6 and stuff. But if you don't have to care about the fallbacks, it's not so bad. But yeah, if dealing with the old IE way, yeah, it's rough business. Rather than just going $AJAX, putting a URL and a callback, it's like way easier. Okay, that's a side
note. We should say Rakascal in the chat room is pointing out, like, every time you write something in jQuery, you are actually using vanilla JavaScript. Because jQuery is just an abstraction, but we're kind of saying like you're using the sugars from jQuery to accomplish the job.
What you see, what you internalize as an author is its own thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're 30 minutes in here already, so we should do some. Yeah. That's the deep dive alarm there. I want to send you to the URL cssummit.com. There's three S's in there. You're going to utilize your left ring finger a bunch there if you're a touch typist. Oh, yeah, that was a weird. cssummit.com. Now you. Bringing the experts to your desktop, the CSS Summit is the online conference that improves your workflow or inspiring your work. So it's kind of both, right? It's inspiring talks and kind of practical. You should bring this stuff back to your workplace kind of thing. You don't have to leave your home. It's online. Literally, you participate in the chat rooms, view the speakers speaking live right through your browser window. It's pretty cool. And put your questions right there. And I find that if you have a good question, it will be answered pretty much at these things. Like, you know. Good stuff. No travel hassle, no airplane seats, no crummy hotels, no time away from friends and family. Just visit there at CSS Summit. It's one of their biggest ones of the year. It's one of their 3-day ones. It's coming up July 7th through 9th. If you choose to go, you can go for 1 day or 2 day or 3 days, depending on the speakers. Do whatever you want to do. Buy group tickets for your whole office, whatever you want to do. You get 20% off any of those things if you use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW. Get all the recordings afterwards, too. So enjoy attending the CSS Summit. They talk about CSS and more, for sure. Let's do some questions. We have some that kind of came in here. It was one by Stephanie Green, Dave.
Yep. Hi, Lar. I know you work a lot with WordPress. What do you think of the new Layers site builder on Envato?
We should have probably given you a heads up on this thing.
But have you seen the site builder?
Pass.
No, but you are familiar with WordPress plugins that give you some. Let's maybe start with one that you're more familiar with, like the. No, you were telling me about one. So
no,
you know
I know, I know.
It.
I just like ugh. So there's this one. I don't know. I want to do this talk for like a WordCamp about like responsive theme selection. Or something like that, because there's like you go on ThemeForest or whatever that's like these super parallax video background things, whatever, and it's like that's not what you actually need maybe for your website, and it should be kind of selecting something about, you know, it's like what content you have, so like map your content, like come up with your content, map it one to one with a theme that's, you know, suitable. Don't go by like what the theme looks like, because if it has a video background, it's like, okay, what video are you going to put there? That kind of thing. And I haven't actually like looked into the layout builder before, but I have worked with kind of a semi-disaster. I mean, it turned out okay, but one of these premium themes that's built on this plugin Visual Composer that lets you just like, it looks like Squarespace almost. Like you can go into this kind of front-end editor thing and like move components around, like make complete grid stuff in, I don't know, their thing. And it's all actually just this kind of vomit of short codes. And it's just like, you know, performance is a thing now. Well, and like these aren't good for that. So
That's cool.
I haven't seen Layout Builder specifically, but.
Yeah, it's just, I guess the URL's layers, WP, and you know, certainly, I mean, it's a big, nice looking site. Clearly, with the success of things like Squarespace and stuff and other versions of this, there's clearly some market for this. It's helping some kind of people out there, right?
It looks like it's
there's
kind
so
of
many arguments for and against it.
It's kind of square spacing your WordPress admin. Am I crazy to think it's that? It's kind of like it gives you tools to visually create your site.
Yeah. No, you're not crazy, and it's not 100% visual too. It's not like you never see any kind of admin area. There's still kind of like a place where you put titles and stuff, and you kind of drag in different chunks, I think, is kind of the idea, and kind of define what's going to go in what column and stuff. It looks kind of neat, and you know, I'd say it's a little unfair potentially to say that just because you use this, then your site is not performant. It might lend itself towards building non-performant sites, but there's always the performance is a result of like images that are too big and too many assets loading and, making other kind of mistakes with your server setup and stuff. Like, this is just a way to kind of manage content and stuff. And it may encourage or may come with pre-existing templates and stuff that are not performant, but I don't know if those things are one-to-one necessarily.
There's definitely like a use case for it, but I guess the site that I was working on, it was just like the amount of hours that went into dealing with this thing, as opposed to like, at the end of it, they kind of might as well have paid me to make a custom site. Like, it started as kind of a tutoring thing, helping them with this theme. And then they were kind of like, all this stuff is breaking. Like, we don't know how to fix this. And you go in and you kind of have to add like pixel based padding and things like that. And then there's like this negative header option that's like adding a whole bunch of inline styles and like importance everywhere. And so I think just the potential for it to become something like that is pretty big.
Yeah, I can see that, because it does its thing, and it's no different than any other website. It has to accomplish these features that it offers with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And if you want to tweak it or do something that it doesn't natively do, what are the mechanisms for doing that could be quite convoluted in how you have to do it, I suppose. That like short code vomit thing scares me a little bit too, and kind of like your lot. If you choose to go this route, this isn't just like a little sugar on top of traditional WordPress. You're kind of probably locked into using this kind of thing forever. It kind of depends on short codes that come from that. I personally like to kind of run my WordPress kind of close to the metal, so it. Ooh. I don't know, but whatever. I guarantee this helps some people on planet Earth, and I'm not gonna.
I think it's a very visual tool. I think if you have a visual client, that would be very, very handy. And you know they want to just tinker and tweak, and because clients kind of like to do that sometimes. They just like, I'm going to change it every day because I know a little bit of WordPress. And you're like, don't do that. But okay, here's this tool that does that. That might work out perfectly for you. I like that Laura mentioned the performance stuff. You know how we always will recommend, just put a friend up on Squarespace or whatever. I had a friend, Rod, come to me recently and ask me what he should do for like a food truck client. And I said, I'll just put him on Squarespace. That sounds good. And he started heading down that path. I think he is heading down that path. But then he like sent me an email and he's like, hey, I just ran this through webpage test just to see what was going on. Uh-huh. It had a speed index of like 12,000. Like 1, 2.
But you're looking for under 3,000, right? Plus. So it's four times as
bad. 4x too slow. And he was just like, is this good? And I was like, no, that is not good, actually. So it's kind of this, not to name and shame and fat shame Squarespace or whatever, but like there is that can have significant business impacts now that Google ranks on that sort of stuff. So that's something to consider when you're setting your client up on this stuff. I ran sites.layerswp.com/baking. through the Fat Shamer webpage test.org, and it came back with a speed index of 6630. So it's about 2x too slow. The start render was 5 0.3 seconds, which is super bad. So
anyway, free startup idea, people. Let's start making WordPress themes that are rock at performance.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on it.
Working on it. Good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. You finish up. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I was going to say, like, with Relentless idea of, like, content blocks, so kind of what Karen McGrane does, like, separating out, you know, instead of the blob, right? And I think that there could be themes potentially, like, instead of giving so many, like, layout options, you could kind of, like, theme a chunk of content. So, like, there's a text block and there's, like, a list block, and you're kind of just changing the order. And then maybe you do need kind of a developer to come in and work with those in terms of styling, things like that. But if it could be kind of, like, start with the content and, like, what kind of content you need, and then work around that instead of thinking about the layout and kind of visual display first, which is what a lot of these themes do, I think.
I think that's a very good point. So, imagine you're designing a page that looks like layerswp.com, like a startup homepage kind of thing, where there's like a hero at the top and some text, and then below that there's like, you know, a grid of three, and each one has an image, a title, a paragraph, and a button, and they're laid out 3x3, and then one of them's like a screenshot and a title that really like shows you something close, and then there's a grid of six. And then there's like, you know, an embedted tweet or whatever. Like, so in a traditional CMS, or like I think a normal like WordPress page, you just get the one text area, and you got to put all that stuff in a text area if you're trying to manage that content. And I think what Laura's saying is, wouldn't it be nice to think of those as blobs or chunks or whatever, so that they're not just like disparate HTML sitting in a text area. They have some kind of structured ness to them, and you can kind of move them around and manage them in a more reasonable way than just HTML sitting in a text area, you know.
Yeah, totally.
All right, let's shut that one down. And yeah, we have a new audio question from Ben. I'm loading it. I apologize. I should have prepared here. Talk about web performance. Yeesh. Here we go. All right, here we go. It's for Laura. Here we go.
Hi, Laura. It's nice. Ben, your brother. Hope you're doing a great job on your Shop Talk show thus far. I'm not sure if you have admitted this to anybody, but I will. Laura grew up on a llama farm for the first 18 years of her life with me. Laura, I'd like you to tell everybody what kind of impact the llamas have had on your very successful web design and consulting career thus far.
Good question, Ben. Good question, Ben.
Laura, disclaimer that my brother runs a podcast also, so he's like super on point. Well, yeah, the llamas are a little bit of a sore subject. I'm joking here, but it's like a big source of like mortification in high school, because I was like, you know, 18 and angsty and like listening to ska music, sleeping on the bus, and
hold on, did you have a mohawk that looked just like a llama mohawk?
No.
Okay.
I did have some like pink hair though. Oh,
but the llamas didn't jive with your style necessarily. Is that the?
No. Well, it was kind of like a super small town, right? And the bus driver would be like, "Next stop, Laura at Llama Land," and I was like, "No, stop!" And so everybody like knew our family and like me as like the llama girl. And so it's just like, yeah, I had like a really good friend in college that my parents they kind of like came and met, and I'd, you know, been friends with him for like 3 years, and he found out that I grew up on a llama farm, and he was like, "What?" So I used to like keep this fact from people a lot, but now I'm okay with it. It's kind of a fun fact. I have it in my like FAQ on my about page. It's like, did you really grow up on a llama farm? Yes.
So how many llamas are we talking? 10?
Well, hundreds? Oh, so there's only like 5 or so now. They've died off. But at one point we had like 30 of them.
Wow.
And
llamas can be kind of vicious. Am I right in saying that? They get kind of punchy? They get kind of punchy?
With each other. They don't really bother people. They're kind of shy, so they'll run away.
Okay.
I mean, unless you like are really provoking them, then they'll spit at you. But otherwise,
that might have been my problem.
They spit at each other when they're battling over food.
Mm.
Kind of thing. Yeah, I'm a farm girl. I was way more into horseback riding, though.
Mm.
Although we did, my brother and I did show the llamas in 4-H when we were youngins. It's pretty funny. Not sure. Yeah. Not sure like how
how it
impacted
that
web stuff, I guess, but maybe just like
probably
a fun
did
fact now. So I like that. Yeah.
Maybe as you know, in later years, it'll all come back to the llamas. You just don't know yet.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Interesting.
Uh-huh. I doubt it.
yeah.
We'll see. No.
The show is also sponsored by Good
L-Y-N-D-A.
I was going to be like, the L stands for llama. It doesn't, but it's L-Y in the A. They have us say it, and I think it's appropriate, because if you've never heard of them, it's not L-I in the A, you know, like you might think. It's L-Y-N-D-A, and she's a real person. In fact, a really awesome person who started lynda.com. You should read her Wikipedia article. Anyway, it's been around forever. It's a very fancy place to learn things online. Over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. If you go to our URL, /shoptalk1, you get the free 10-day free trial, which is pretty cool. So if you've never done it before, you know, you should ask yourself what kind of thing you feel like leveling up in, because you can get it done, you know? There's even like, you know, there's classes like, you want to like write an app for Android Wear? You can do that because they have one of their they call them up and running classes, which are pretty sweet. They're kind of like the let's get going on this new technology one. So they have one for that, which is pretty great, you know. Or if you want to do something totally different from the web or write an actual Android app, they have you get up and running with Java. There's a whole series of those kind of things. They have all the, you know, like if you want to be better at any of the Adobe software, they got all that. All the course, all the same stuff that we talk about on this show. I recently watched the Angular course just because I like to stay up to date with that kind of thing. Pretty fun. Pretty great. So check out the URL, lynda.com/sign up. Get your free trial. Fill up the iPad app with stuff before your next flight. Do something like that. Level up, y'all. What else
we got here? Right. Let's get some more meat and taters here into the show. Jeff Gold writes in a previous episode, there's some talk about how important it is to have a GitHub profile when searching for jobs. And I was wondering if you had any tips on how to build a good GitHub profile if, like me, you're not quite the GitHub type. I've been a freelance web developer for 10 years, mostly covering whole stack from design to front-end development. To back-end WordPress dev on every project. I'm looking to move to a remote full-time position as a front-end dev where I can learn more, focus, and be pushed by working with the team, which we kind of talked about at the top of the show. But as a freelance dev, most of the work I do is custom development for specific projects. So what would you do if time is limited, but you feel like having a showcase on GitHub is the only way to get noticed by companies you work for?
Yeah. I've thought about this for sure. So GitHub's like super, super important. And I like personally don't, you know, I haven't really submitted like pull requests to open source projects other than one little generator thing for Keystone, which is like this Node CMS deal. And I found like a mistaken link. And it was like a really silly thing, but I was like, oh, wow, I could totally do a pull request for this. And so I'm a contributor. But like small things like that, right? So like just testing stuff out and like putting issues up. And I also put up client sites on GitHub.
Really?
Like, yeah, WordPress. I mean, I clear it with them first, obviously. But like with Timber, this library thing, the Twig thing, I put the themes up there. And it's kind of like, you know, I'll put, if I'm organized enough, I'll make like a readme. That's kind of, you know, it's kind of the designing in the open thing, I guess, on
sure
a small
and
scale.
It's not so like I'll where write, you deploy their site from, but it's just like a copy of it up there. So it's safe and part of your code portfolio in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll, you know, I'll write a little bit about like, you know, where inspiration came, like maybe a little bit about the folder structure, that kind of thing. And then just, I don't know, I have a bunch of stuff up there, and even things that I was working on a WordPress theme like in college and after college that's like super deprecated now, and I asked on a forum once that was like, oh, should I take this down because it's like gross code and doesn't work, and someone was like, no, like keep it up there and just like make a note because it's part of like your growth as a developer. I think. And even if it is, you know, if you're just starting using GitHub, you won't have that track record, obviously. But I think like putting things up and just say, like, hey, I, you know, write a little bit about what you did, and just the fact that it's there doesn't have to be like something you're, you know, you don't have to be like a major contributor to other repositories, I don't think.
Yeah, you just kind of have a presence there because you can be found there. I think that's what Jeff is kind of asking, right? Is that like, I don't know. Should you be there? Should you be findable there? Probably.
Yeah. And like in this that hiring episode with the vSources, I think they were talking about like, you know, they don't care about your resume. They want to see like GitHub, that kind of stuff. They want to see like, you know, look at code and like look at what you do and submitting issues, things like that. Or commenting on them. And I always feel like, you know, very unqualified to do that. But, you know, why not? Right?
It's imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. I know. Well, but yeah, I mean, everybody feels like that, I think. And just let's be done with it. So just do it. Mm-hmm. That's my philosophy now.
I was going to say, like, I would, me personally, I'm maybe backing away from my you have to have a GitHub thing, you know. I think it's
about CodePen, really. I feel like it's, yeah, really CodePen's gotta have one of those.
Really gonna leverage you into the cloud. 10x. And so I want to back away from, but because a lot of open source, it really is like, it basically says, I have this much free time, so I can do all these things, unless your job is paying you to do open source or you're able to open source client work, which I am in that position. It sounds like Lara's in that position. She can do that. But, you know, so if your job or whatever is not allowing you to do that, then that's kind of maybe it's just going to be harder to get stuff online. But I will say, documentation is code. So if you fix somebody's documentation, even if it's like a typo or some dumb thing, that's awesome. Because I know I need that. I usually auto merge all documentation fixes, just cause I'm like, yep. Okay. Sounds good. So that's some, you know, don't go to my repos. I have enough open issues, but look around for things you like and see if you can help make it better, get your foot in the door. And you may find it addicting once you do. That's what I would say. But
I find
again,
it slightly weird to put code on GitHub that like isn't the canonical source of that code, you know, that like just like had some code sitting around. You're like, I'll throw it on GitHub. Maybe like when, as you do that, start considering that repo like the place that you keep that code. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't want to work on a client site and then have to keep two things, have to keep the repo up to date separately, because that's not really, I'm not really using it as part of a workflow. It's just like a showcase for that code.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do use it. I mean, it's like, that's where I host, unless I'm like missing some major, tactic for like workflow, but yeah, I mean, so I, you know, that's just where I host the Git stuff.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, that, I mean, that makes perfect sense. But if somebody's like, I got to have a GitHub profile. I have some projects here sitting on my hard drive. Maybe I'll just blast them up there just because.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah.
That seems weird.
Well, I was going to say, like, there are ways where this can help, like open source can help just like optimize your workflow. Like I had, For every WordPress site I was making, I was ticking Starkers, an old HTML5 theme or HTML5
bullet,
and Starkers, which was like this
Elliot
totally
ancient thing.
Yeah, just a very clean layout, no CSS, just like markup, right? And so I took those two H5BP and married them into a thing called Borkers. Don't use it because it's like for WordPress too, but. Borkers was my starter theme, and I would use Borkers like on everything, and it's all up online, and I just kept like making little edits to make it better over time. And I never did that because it has one commit, but I would always download this zip. You can just download the zip and start like coding from that. And so I mean it's just kind of, you know, it sort of is a cool way to upload some of your brain, that stuff you do for every single project. You can just upload it and say like, if this helps somebody, that helps somebody, but this is mostly just for me. So I'm putting my brain, I'm offloading some of my brain up onto the cloud. So,
yeah, I have like 8 starter kits up there probably. Like every time you do one. I did. That's great. That's a great way to think about it.
I have this one, jQuery.sortByData, that I made and never publicized it. But I put it up there and then I like it first commit, last commit, one commit 4 years ago. And I needed it like 2 months ago. And I was like, oh, I have this thing up online. I'm just going to grab it. So it can help you out in some jams too. So anyway, that's what I would say.
Love it.
Yep. All right.
Beep. So can we talk about this Timber thing for a second? Because we mentioned it twice and didn't explain it to anybody maybe. And you like it, right? So is there any?
I know. I'm super. I'm like a Timber evangelist.
Okay. Let's hold church.
Specifically for WordPress. Timber. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So Timber is a library that lets you use Twig templating for WordPress. So Twig is like MVC templating for PHP. Or like templating engine for PHP, but it lets you use WordPress in kind of like an MVC-ish way, and you don't have to deal with the loop anymore, and like it plays really nicely with advanced custom fields. So, you know, it's like I have some things on GitHub if you wanna look through those too. But so you can basically like in the regular PHP template, you have that kind of acts as like the controller, and you can pass data into the views, and you have your regular views directory, and you can extend things and like include things really easy and pass like kind of context variables into other templates, and it's just really nice and kind of helps, you know, really helps you think of things in systems and gets like all the PHP dollar signs out of the way of your markup and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty fun.
Nice.
Yeah,
well, it's just that clean kind of mustachy syntax into WordPress,
yeah,
with kind of a data model. You build a data model, I guess, before the page spits out. Is that kind of how that works?
Well, it's all there.
Okay.
You know, because it's just automatically like page.php does that. So like the Timber object, whatever, kind of like takes care of everything. It's pretty magical. And then so if you're getting like a post title, it's, you know, you just go right into the view. So page.twig automatically, or like in the kind of Timber starter kit setup, that's automatically referenced, like connected to page.php. Mm-hmm. And so in page.twig, you just have like post.title or whatever, like post.date. And then you can use twig filters, which are really cool. So if you want to like strip tags from something, or there are, Timber has like this kind of image function. So you can change, like if you want to do so like source set and something, you can say, you know, have your source set and then put it through the Timber image manipulation and change the size of it. And it's kind of all done in a really pretty, pretty syntax. So it looks exactly like Django templates too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
All right. Well, glowing endorsement for Timber.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, sister, for sharing the good word. Chris, should we probably wrap it up, huh? We are running out of time, sadly.
Probably. That was a nice way to end it anyway. I know. Where?
I was hoping there could be an appearance of the web standards gentlewoman.
Oh,
a little callback. You shall not use premium WordPress theme.
a
little callback.
A gentlewoman appears on the show for the very first time. It is delightful to have you in here, good sister. Well, that was such a pleasure. Hey, thank you so much for coming onto the show. For people who are not following you, giving you money for llamas, how do they do that? And then what's one thing you'd like to plug if there's something other than Timber before you go?
yeah, so my Twitter handle is LauraS126 because someone named Laura has not Laura and hasn't tweeted since 2011, but pick your battles. so LauraS126, not Laura.com. Yeah, something to plug, I guess, like me, my service. I don't know. I like, I love like teaching, and I'm trying to get together some like independent classes either here in New York or remote somehow. But, I have like a little link on the top of my website to like a questionnaire to kind of gauge interest. And then, I don't know. I really like meeting people and like chatting. So, if you're in New York, hit me up.
Yeah. You know, we didn't even talk about all your deep knowledge of cocktails, so we'll save that for
another. Oh, I know. Yeah, we can go get... I'm drinking a Negroni right now, actually.
Whoa.
No.
Well
no, done. Not really. That'll be fun, though.
I was just at a hotel where it was Negroni week. You would have loved it.
Negroni week. Oh, yeah. Lots of that.
Well, cool. I was going to try to do a Negroni pun. Like, you have really Negroni'd on me as a person, as a friendship. So that was terrible. Anyway, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for listening, downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to vote us up in there, star, heart, favorite, whatever. Just 5 stars. It's just that easy. That's how people find out about the show. And thank you. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Tell us whether or not you like FizzBuzz this week. We're interested in learning your opines. And thank you, everybody. Chris, if you hate your job, is there something you need to do about that?
Yeah. You should probably just get a new one because, you know, if the tech job thing these days is very, you know, if you're good, you can jump around. You can work where you want to work. If you have some skill and ability in web design and development, switch it up. I should tell you about one particular job that's available. It's at a company called Findaway, which is really cool. They build things in the audiobook and ebook kind of space, which is cool, like building interesting things with APIs and SDKs and stuff for iOS and Android and stuff to make online reading kind of cool, which is great. They have a product called Audio Engine, and they've worked with Nook and kind of interesting things. If you're interested in that future, which is certainly the future of books, I'm sorry to say, I still like paper too, but if I was betting on the future, it's all about the ebook. Findaway is looking for a front-end web developer. So we'll put the link in the show notes for that. But, you know, bachelor's degree, 3 years kind of thing. It's, you know, I guess we could critique their job description, but I actually think it's quite well done, actually. It's like has really nice typography and a really clear way to apply for it. And a video showing their workspace and stuff and the technologies that they use, which is like Git and GitHub and SCSS and Require.js and Vagrant and HipChat. And like they're like, oh, wow, you guys know what you're talking about. There's no misspellings in here. So I just should be talking about the job a little more. But it's a front-end web development job for a very cool company. So we'll put the link in there. Go work at Findaway.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And yeah, find a way that's good. For more jobs, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. And Chris, you got anything else? I'm trying to think if there's one more thing.
Shoptalkshow.com.